Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Remember looking at Waddell because he was my roommate for the whole year, my guy. And I looked at him on the plane and I couldn't get my hand to 90 degrees. So I looked at him and that was kind of the moment, like something's happened.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. On today's episode, I'm talking to former University of Virginia national champion left-hander Nathan Kirby. Often on this show, we talk with guests who are top high school prospects about dealing with the go pro or go to college draft decision. Nathan took his college commitment a step further, pulling himself entirely out of the 2012 draft in order to attend UVA. We talk about that decision and why he prioritized the chance to get a UVA education over a chance at big money in pro ball. He's candid about a college career with a lot of highs and some lows. He turned lessons learned from a tough freshman year into a first-team All-American sophomore year that features an all-time great single-game performance but also ended on a very sour note. His junior year was kind of the opposite as he struggled with his health during the entirety of the season but ended his UVA career on the highest note possible. We talk all that plus what life is like when your body won't cooperate to keep you on the field. It was a great conversation. Really enjoyed talking to Nathan. Very glad he stopped by. Episodes of Phenom to the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And go check out past interviews. We are well over 100 now. A lot of evergreen content. So if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Also make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA Podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. Professional baseball season is upon us, which means the prospect hot sheet is coming out soon. We've also got college coverage, the college hot sheet. It is always a good time to be subscribed to Baseball America. And with that, let's talk to Nathan Kirby. All right, joining in on today's episode from Phenom on the Farm, he's the 40th overall pick of the 2015 draft out of UVA, left-hander and College World Series champion Nathan Kirby. Nathan, thank you so much for taking the time to join the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You got it, man. And as we were putting this together, you let me know that you're retired and you've gotten into kind of coaching or you're doing some sort of coaching. And as someone who is dealing with Little League coaching right now, I wanted to ask you, what's your favorite thing about coaching and what is the most frustrating thing?
I think coaching in general for me, I don't really like to call it coaching. I don't want to get on that side of the fence. I'd like to consider myself an engineer of sorts, to figure out any solutions people might have. But I think the thing that's been the toughest, I wouldn't call it the most frustrating, but the toughest is just the individuality in the kids and learning the language of each kid. I've trying to work with all ages, but we're not going to work with anyone really under 8, 10 to 8, because they could go in so many different directions. But yeah, there's a lot of complexity to each age group and it changes with each year. So it's been really fun, but there's the complexity of the individuality of each kid really has been unique. It's been fun.
I'll second that. Having to like learn kids and their specific tics and how to communicate with them is challenging, especially because I'm coaching Little League because I have a 10-year-old. So I know how to communicate with him and there's obviously a different comfort level there. But learning other kids has been a trip, man. But let's go back into your career, your playing career. As coming up in middle school, high school, whenever, when did you realize you were going to have a future at the next level of baseball, whether that be top tier college baseball or the pro game?
I think maybe it got more serious my senior year of high school. Baseball for me was always an escape of sorts, and it became an area for me to learn and to grow, where I struggled to learn in the settings where you're having to sit and learn, you know, and on someone else's time. But I would say really my senior year was when I realized that I still wanted to take baseball seriously and others didn't. I was fortunate. I played around a bunch of high level athletes and never really, I don't feel like I ever stood out from a lot of them. I may have being that I was left-handed and threw hard, but I think everyone was good at something. It was just kind of realizing junior, senior year, I just wanted to keep going. You know, there's people that find different things that they're interested in life. And I just still was choosing baseball, you know, and I didn't realize really my senior year, I was like, oh, I'm going to college for this, you know? And then really my freshman year, sophomore year of college, it was, okay, I'm realizing something that I've been working for, you know? But I had never really, I kind of had dreamt of saving things, you know, like helping my family out, but it was never really something that I was striving to become this person. You know, I showed up to practice and did my job every day. And was just, that was kind of the thing that I got out of baseball, if that makes sense, the structure of the sport itself.
Well, and as you, as you get into that junior, senior year and you start getting some attention, how did you evaluate the college decision? If it was something that you were then, around that time deciding that I do want to make a run at this, how did you kind of figure out where was going to be the best place to do that?
I think me choosing college is indicative of the fact that I didn't, I wasn't really, the big leagues is obviously, it's a step in a baseball player's career, but when I've made decisions in my life, I've been fortunate that my parents have been there by my side and they've given me the right information to make good decisions. And that decision for me was, I wasn't ready. I wasn't grown up. I had been fortunate to go down to East Coast Pro and see some of the guys that these guys had been thinking about baseball since they were eight. You know, they were reading books. They had this regimented schedule. They were ready to go into the minor leagues. And I realized that they were on a completely different path than I was. And my junior year, when I went down there and played, I saw kind of the separation in their lifestyle and mine and just where their head was and mine was. And I just realized I need to go to college. It seemed like a better place for me to grow. I've never really made, I just wasn't ready for all of the things that came with getting drafted. I wanted to stay in school.
Yeah. Well, and you made the pretty notable decision, which is something that has become kind of synonymous with programs like UVA. Sometimes like Vandy has had this where guys have taken their name out of the draft and chosen you. You kind of said, I don't even want the temptation. Is that kind of where you were coming from with that? Of like, I'm not interested in it. I don't even want it, because if you hadn't taken your name out of the draft, someone reasonably could have popped you and said, well, turn down this money.
Yeah, well, actually, the decision to completely remove my name, so I decided in January or February of that year that I didn't want to play professional baseball yet. And my agent had, blessed to have a great agent. He gave me some great advice and just told me that whatever decision that I made, I needed to make and stand behind it. Because if I was going to get drafted higher, in whatever round, who cares, labels. But if I was going to get drafted higher, there's more money and more people's jobs on the line if I was to say one thing and do another. So I felt that I was pretty confident in the fact that I would keep playing baseball. And regardless, I would be successful if I played 3 years in the minor leagues or 3 years closer to a college degree. You know what I mean? I felt like the competition would be similar. So that those were all things that I kind of factored my decision. And I felt like I would grow up better in a college environment than in 3 years of similar level of baseball play, if not lower for a little while. So that's those are all decisions that you have to make as an 18-year-old. So that was my decision, was I was definitely not ready. I felt like the level of play would be similar in college. Plus, I'm getting an education. So that was my big thing, was the education.
Why was UVA the pick for you? I mean, education kind of stands out when anyone picks UVA. But, I mean, you're kind of fortunate in where you grew up in Midlothian, Virginia.
Yes.
The
yes.
closest big program to you is a national power with a pretty significant degree.
Yep. Nope. That was my thing. I saw how many people got into UVA from my high school. We're getting into UVA, juniors and seniors ahead of me. It's not many. You got to be one of the best students. It's a fight to get into that school. And they offered me as a sophomore going into my junior year. And I didn't really have a school in mind. Like I said, I wasn't this guy that was following schools or following the big leagues. I followed, my favorite players were Chipper Jones and Andrew Jones. They weren't pitchers. I didn't like pitching in high school. I loved hitting. It wasn't until I was kind of, I just kept playing, and people, that's how life works. We get into these ruts, and if we follow who we are, then you make good decisions, hopefully, but yeah, UVA, the school part of it really sold it for me. I have always struggled in school, but I've liked learning. So that to me was, and I'm very fortunate to have gone there because they really bring out the best in you. I wasn't the best student, but being around the best students, I wanted to do better. So that's the environment you want to be in life.
Well, it seems like it was definitely the right call for you. So you
Absolutely.
make it onto campus, and I was watching some of your high school tape, and it doesn't look like you changed your mechanics a whole lot, except for kind of a version of just what I call like the UVA crouch, which I think it was a lot more pronounced back when you were playing. I remember like watching Danny Holson just squat like he's working out. And I haven't had anyone from UVA on the show yet. I just need to like walk me through. Okay, you get on. Is it like everyone's, that's the mantra, or do they give you a choice, or can it kind of walk me through that specific mechanical adjustment and how you incorporated that into your wind up?
Well, we had to do it. So it was a mechanical thing that we were kind of supposed to do, but I think the thought process behind it, and it's not a bad one, is if you're working with a bunch of guys, how do you make sure all of them start athletic? Because you have a couple different types of pitchers. You have some guys that rely on tension, some guys that rely on timing, some guys that rely on distance. It's such a complex thing, and how to create energy and then distribute it, and then to force it back at, out of the ground, then back into the ground, out of your hand. But I think the mindset was to make sure that you started athletic. And I didn't have an issue with it, but my philosophy now is if I get a kid throwing 95, he's getting into that position. He's not going to not get into that position to throw 95. Now, maybe if he doesn't throw strikes, we look at stability or something else. But yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I think that you could apply the same mindset to hitters too, and you could see a change, but I don't think everybody needs to do it. It definitely, I won't say it helps everybody, but it definitely, I was a pitcher that relied on timing and distance, and I needed to acquire more tension in my delivery. So it definitely benefited me. Not necessarily out of the windup, because I would get there, but out of the stretch, I do think that it really benefited me.
Yeah, I've just always found it interesting. There are certain tics like that that are associated with particular programs.
Yeah, yeah.
The Stanford swing was a big thing at one point. So as you get into that freshman year at UVA, I kind of always talk about on the show, freshman year is just weird for everyone. You're trying to figure out your role, where you're going to stand out. You're suddenly amongst players of all, for the most part, similar talents. And if you're a guy like you who had draft interest in high school, was a prospect, things like that, you are in high school, you are the man. You started a bunch of games as a senior. The world kind of revolves around the ace. As you get into the spring in that freshman year of UVA, and you were going to be mostly in a bullpen role, how did I'd assume you hadn't thrown out of the bullpen much in general in your high school career, especially, as you got older. How did you develop a routine that, taking what you do to get ready for a start, and your freshman year kind of configuring that into, okay, this is how I'm ready when the gate opens and I need to pitch in the sixth or seventh inning?
I didn't. I did. I think I don't know how many specific opportunities I had in my freshman tenure, but I probably messed up 90% of them. And I couldn't be more thankful for the failures that I did have as a freshman for UVA, because I learned differently. I struggled in school a lot. I had good grades, but I re really struggled to learn. I'm good at learning on the fly, but bad at learning to learn, bad at developing that routine. So that was the biggest shock for me, was, seeing the wide range of guys coming in as freshmen. You got sophomores, juniors, seniors, fifth years that are there, and the routines that they had, and the success that the guys that did have routines had. I was fortunate enough to meet with a psychologist named Jim Bauman my freshman year, and I would attribute a lot of my success as a baseball player and as a man to his philosophies and how he goes about life and how he trained me to really break down what baseball was and to break down life and to break down each and every day. And to break down my thought patterns and kind of what I was feeling. And I think that through failing 90% of the time my freshman year, doing a lot of running, that I applied a lot of those things I learned. And when I went away to summer ball, I fought some of the things that I had learned, and I learned that I needed to do some of those things, you know. And I think part of that is maturing. And going back to my answer earlier, that's ultimately the reason I chose to go to college, because everything that I've done, I've failed 90 times before I get that 91st try. And I'm just the guy that learns on the one try once I fail, you know. One of the reasons I didn't like pitching as a kid is because I grew up with the yips. I grew up with anxiety, whatever attention deficit, just an anxious human. And I remember hearing my mom in the stands, I could hear conversations. And that was my big evolution as a player, is learning to deal with that stuff. Learning to deal with a lot of these things that a lot of adults have issues with. And once I kind of shook that, I got a lot better, but a lot of it was between the ears for me. And ironically, that was what every coach told me. Coming up, it's just finding the right messenger, I think, in life.
When you talk about leaving that freshman year and heading into summer ball, because summer ball is that kind of environment where it's like, I'm going to work on some things because you're trying to make yourself better for the next spring. Are there specific examples you have of, okay, I've incorporated this, you know, because a lot of pitching in general is throwing spaghetti against a wall and seeing what sticks. Is this going to work for me? Is this grip going to work for me? Is this routine going to work for me? Should I try this when leaving
trial
with my hip?
Error.
Things like that. It's complete trial and error. And clearly the trial and error between your freshman and sophomore year, some things stuck. Are there specific examples of, you know, light bulbs going off, or just maybe over the course of a couple starts or outings in the spring of like, hey, this seems to be working for me. I'm getting better results than I did in the spring.
Just repetition, trial and error. I think a lot of, I'll tell people this all the time. Carl was one of the greatest baseball minds that I've ever been around, in the way that he sees stats and numbers and blah, blah, blah. But he thinks differently than I do. And when I got away from the way that he thought, but was able to apply how he thought to some of the things that I thought, and that kind of fused, you know, I started to understand what he was saying, is what I'm trying to say. And I had the great privilege to have Nate Irving, our catcher, come catch. I think he was playing for Team USA that summer. But he was up there for the first couple weeks, and that just having the same catcher go through a different set of circumstances while using the same information that we had been given really helped me gain that confidence that I could move the ball. You know, that's just, when you're a freshman, you know, we had guys like Brandon Waddell who were far ahead of me in terms of where he was at in his mental space. And he just acclimated to UVA and became the Friday guy and just never really hit a bump. But I was just, we all learn differently. You know, we all have different gifts, and mine was just getting away from the situation, because I am a very high strung person. It just is what it is. And when I leave the environment and come back, I'm a different person. It's just, I just needed that separation. You know, Carl is one of the smartest people, and he was giving me too much information at times, which is great because it made me a lot of who I was, but it's that's me and my learning style. I needed to get away, and it's still the same, even in golf today. I'm back at square one playing golf.
Man, I know that feeling.
Yeah.
As you get into fall ball, the fall of 2013, after that freshman year and that summer, did you know then that the spring would be a different season for you in terms of, you got that year of experience, you've got that comfort, you've done that trial and error. Did you see it all, what was coming for you?
Yes, in a way, but I mean, we had so many great athletes on that team that it was just never, and I really mean this, it was never an individual thing for me. I've always looked at baseball as I'm going to try and show up on time and try and give my best effort. I could definitely tell that I wasn't messing up as much. That's just who I am. Life is a confidence thing. Sports are, you know, a shallow version of that. It's like, you're confident or you're not. And when I came back, and I had really, I am so thankful that I had gotten all of the mess ups out of the way my freshman year, because I just wasn't worried about it all, and I was just absorbing the information that Carl was giving to me a lot easier, and I was able to apply it. My body was working for me. It was just, I was just maturing, you know. Say, I'm not too much of a forward thinking person in terms of, I'm not a planner.
Well, for you, I mean, it's a night and day freshman and sophomore year.
Yes, sir.
As you get into that year, at some point, like with baseball, especially college baseball is weird because it's so compressed. It's like 40 to 60 games, depending on what you're playing. It's, you know, if a guy starts out hot, maybe that goes through the whole season. At what point in the 2014 season did it turn from, man, I'm doing well, I've started off well, to I'm turning in one of the best seasons in the country right now? Like, when's the overlap? Is it April 4th of 2014, or is it before that?
I think that was, I mean, that's basically the reaction I had. Cause like, the one thing that I've learned in life is I have to be a day-to-day guy. I got to have my life planned out, but I am so day-to-day that when I was successful as a sophomore and starting to find that success, I kind of got into this wormhole of not worrying about what was going on in the past and the future. But I did have that moment when I threw the no-hitter where I'll never forget it. Coach Mack, third base coach, one of the more intimidating humans in the world, came up to me and he said something along the lines of, you know, today's over. You got to throw next week. This is like 5 minutes after it happened. And I'm so thankful that I had someone with that perspective on life, because it really did. It like, I shut down. I was happy and went through the, like, as a team, we were happy. And then for me, I kind of just felt like the lights dimmed down and I just started thinking about the next week, and it just did. It was like, wow, he's right. Like, I just had the best game I'll ever have, and somehow I have to go out and throw next week, knowing that it's only downhill from here. It's like making a, you know, your first golf shots next to the hole, you know, it's only downhill from there. And how do you replicate those swings with that same confidence? But yeah, I really, having people like him around me were the reason that I succeeded as much as the effort that I was putting in, if that makes sense.
I do want to hang on that April 4th game for a little bit, because April 4th against Pitt, Friday night, you go out, it's not just a no hitter, it's an 18 strikeout no hitter. Did you kind of walk me through that? At what point do you realize, hey, this is a real thing. This is a no-no. And also, like, hey, you've clearly, like, in college especially, you were a guy who missed a lot of bats, but when does it turn into, man, this is a lot of punchies. Like, there's not a lot of balls in play tonight.
Well, it was a weird day. So we had our game delayed, I think, about an hour. And then it was one of those spring days where it rains on the backside of the storm, you get 40 mile an hour winds. It was not fun baseball weather for anybody there. But I remember in the sixth inning, people started acting different in the dugout, and I'm not someone, like I say, I got to keep my head down, man. As soon as I see someone in stands, or I see someone I recognize, or I look anywhere other than where I'm supposed to be looking when I'm focusing, I get sidetracked. And I remember in the sixth inning, I realized people were like, they're a little bit quieter now. And I got through into the seventh, and then I realized what was going on. But I do have the benefit of having the personality of, well, I mean, we're going to do this thing or we aren't, you know? And I do remember telling some people they needed to relax, because we're winning the game. They have no hits in the seventh. It's going well. Let's keep doing the same thing. I do remember not liking that at all. I didn't like how other people were changing as the game went on. But yeah, it was a crazy experience, because that was the one time I'll ever throw nine innings. I struggle. I'm a guy that's going to walk two or three people a game and then get double plays. So my pitch count's not going to be low enough to ever get there. So for me, it was more about like, let's get through these nine innings and finish the game than to try and miss barrels. You know, we had a 30-40 mile an hour crosswind from third, and Pitt's field's elevated. So the umpire maybe missing a few calls and the ball moving a lot really helped me. It wasn't it wasn't all me. I will say that I was aware that I was not the sole perfect thing creating that experience.
I mean, every no-no or perfect game you need a little bit of luck. Like they all have something, and you did punch out 18 guys. Like it was a little bit you there.
It was a great day to be on the mound as a lefty.
I was gonna ask, you know, kind of as you move into the Friday role, if it matters, because at that point, especially in the ACC, it means you're taking on Luke Weaver across the dugout or a Trent Thornton at North Carolina. It seems like you're someone who wouldn't have even really given that a thought of like, I've got to out-duel such and such. I'm just dead focused on doing what I needed to do, and it doesn't matter that Luke Weaver's pitching in the other dugout.
No, I'm like solely motivated by competition.
Wow, so I misread that completely. So Luke Weaver's on the opposite mound, and you're like, I got to beat this guy.
But that's the ego in me, and that's the thing that I learned through meeting Jim was I got to harness this thing, man. You're not getting all 27 outs on the first pitch of every game. You're not going to do it in the bullpen. You're not going to do it before the bullpen. You're not going to do it thinking about it on Monday night before you throw Friday. You have to find a way to make life about the moment and staying focused on what you need to get done that day. And in school, there's a lot of schoolwork in between those games. And yeah, I needed those distractions because I was someone that focused on the competition. That's why baseball was an outlet for me. Cause it was a release to try and compete with the best players on the field. So I didn't see it as like, I have to get this guy. It was like, this is the best, like, this is their best guy. We got to go out and get him type thing, you know? But that's like, I needed, when I harnessed that and learned to use it and focused and stay focused in the moment, that's when I made the elevation. But yeah, that's, I know I'm that guy. I play up and down. I'm in a pool league on Monday, and it's really tough because I play up and down in my competition, and it's there's no game more shallow than a long pool match. So
the one thing I noticed kind of doing some research and looking at old game notes and things like that, and something that I had completely forgotten about the ACC in 2014, 2015, I just have to ask, like, Jameis Winston was playing for Florida State. Like, is that something that was discussed in the dugout? Cause I was like, that your game against Luke Weaver, he was actually, I believe, the losing pitcher in that. Like, Jameis came in. Was it ever, I guess it's different with football and baseball. Was there any starstruckness or any like, was he an oddity in terms of like, hey, that's Jameis Winston?
Yeah, absolutely. He was a great guy. We didn't spend much time talking to him, but I will say the person that he was in the outfield when we were shagging fly balls is the person you see on TV.
Listen to Jameis Winston talk for like 4 hours about literally anything.
Absolutely. It was cool. I remember when he was warming up in the ACC tournament, the series at Florida went by pretty quickly for me, but at the ACC tournament, I remember everyone in the dugout was watching him when we were supposed to be watching the game. So yeah, it was definitely like, you realize that guy's choosing to play baseball, but he's on a different career path.
Yeah. Chose to play after he won the Heisman, still played that next season, cool. Which is
pretty
which
cool.
Is wild. So that you mentioned a lot of great athletes on that UVA team. That is, you know, your 2014 and 2015 teams back-to-back Omaha trips. I have to ask, what's different about like the second trip to Omaha in just off-field stuff in terms of like, did you notice a change in demeanor in yourself, change in demeanor in your team? Like, what are there things that you can glean from that experience the first time that help out the second time? Routine, off-field, anything like that?
Well, the second time I was recovering from mono and a torn lat, so...
You had a tough junior year. We're going to get into that.
Yeah. First time was definitely like more exciting. Like we hadn't been there just as our team. But second time was definitely, you'd seen it before, but personally for me, I was doing everything I could to make sure my arm was ready. And I don't think I recovered from mono from like 4 or 5 months. So I struggled working out into the summer, even when I was with the Brewers. But yeah, it went by really, really fast for me. I was actually, I had the unique privilege of basically being a fan for the better part of like 2.5 months leading up to that. So the second time for me,
you know, our team wasn't anywhere near as good as the year before. And we were, didn't see ourselves as a Cinderella story, but it certainly felt that way because we had a team where some of our pitchers were playing in the outfield. You know, it's just, we were slapping it together and figuring it out. And it really was, it was the complete opposite end of the spectrum as the year before, where we were fighting for every game. Whereas the year before we had a few more expectations, I think. But both years, I mean, I'm so thankful to have had the opportunity to be there and to experienced that environment and those fans. So
First year, the 2014 year, you guys are in the series, the winner take all, the best out of three, and you have what turns into your worst start of the year. And you had mentioned earlier, you know, the focus of, you know, you have this no hitter and it's, I gotta pitch in a week. The problem with having your worst start of the year and your last start of the year, is you've got to sit with that for until the next spring. Walk me through the emotional recovery of that, because I mean, I watched an interview with you in AAA from, I think, 2022, and it was something that it's still clearly bothered you in a way. You know, kind of walk me through, you guys, you dropped that game, you dropped the series. What's the emotional recovery of getting back on the horse and wanting to, you know, is it a motivator? Is it an angry kind of thing?
I was more anger at myself, but I would say that the thing that I'll never forget is seeing some of my idols like Scott Silverstein and Kyle Crockett, that really is, I was the big frustration for them my freshman year, and they really took me under their wing and feeling like I let them down. The big realization for me was the thing that hurts the most in life is not when you let yourself down, but when you let others down. I didn't sit. The thing that haunted me and still haunts me is just they didn't get to experience what I experienced after that, when we did go rectify it for them. But it's just like, yeah, that's the thing that I felt awful for, is seeing the seniors and the juniors that had to move on. You know, it wasn't. I had a great year that year, and I was just unfortunate. If I tell all the guys, you know, all the guys that I'm working with now, if you guys have a bad outing, be blessed that it's your first game. Because if you have a great year and it's your last game, you would rather have it be your first game, 1,000 times out of 1,000. And for me, that's all it was. I just had a bad game. It was unfortunate that it was in the first one, but it was just really hard to watch the older guys have to leave and to say their goodbyes, because a lot of those guys, you know, when you're in life and you have to say goodbye to people that you respect, and you're like, you get used to them being around and kind of helping you out, you know, they're kind of your lifeline. It's you really feel bad for letting them down. So I'm fortunate that I never made it about myself or what I had to do to write something. It was just always about the team, you know. I fundamentally believe that's the only reason I was successful when we went back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We talked about the shift in mindset and changes from in between your freshman and sophomore year, which laid the foundation for what you did as a sophomore. What you did as a sophomore, starting the College World Series aside, which you were first team All-American, multiple publications, semifinalist for the Golden Spikes Award, all this stuff. And it also leads to, you know, you're one of the guys who's in consideration for the top 10 picks in the 2015 MLB draft and things like that, like heading into the year, all those lists. After you have that big run of success, what is the work in between sophomore junior year look like? What is that mentality of, like, I just did pretty much anything you could want to do in a college baseball season, sans maybe one start. How do you build on that? Like, what did you take from your game? I mean, obviously you had some bad luck when it actually came to the spring health wise, but what was the plan of how do I level up from something that is about as good as you can get in college baseball?
I think fortunately I'd already experienced the crescendo of that when I had thrown the no hitter. So for that was never a thought for me. Unfortunately, my elbow was beginning to degrade from years and years of just throwing. And I think that that started in the spring. So some of the things that I was dealing with in the spring were more about maintaining and keeping my head above water than about how can I get better than last year, if that makes sense. I was throwing through a torn ligament for the better half of that year, most of it.
So at what point did you know, like, I'm not 100%? Did that start in the fall?
So I threw in the fall, I put on a ton of muscle in the summer. And now research is finding that if you're putting on a ton of weight, you need to be stressing the ligaments. You need to be pulling on those, that soft tissue near the bones, while you're creating more force on the joints. Cause I basically had put on too much muscle in the summer and probably had already, like every other guy out there, had damage and just didn't throw all summer and came back throwing harder. And just started to put too much stress on the posterior band of my ligament, unfortunately. And it wasn't until, like, I don't remember the specific game, but I threw a game and my velo went down about 8 or 9 miles an hour by the third inning, and threw about 5 games after that, and then tore my lat. So I was beginning to put the life happens to you, and you can only, unfortunately, learn in hindsight. So I was, and then I got diagnosed 2 days with, a week after, it was strep at the time, and then mono a week after. So I was, I got hammered.
The joys of life in the medical tent.
Yeah. My junior year, individually was very stressful. It was just a very stressful year. As a team, we had a lot of success, and that's why when I talk about how important it is to have a team mentality in life, like, that's one of the super important lessons that I learned, is just, even when you're going through it, if you can put yourself in an environment where people are succeeding, you will forget that you're going through it.
That's something I wanted to ask about, because when you tear your lat and, you know, get mono on top of that as like a nice little cherry on top, it kind of is, unless your team, which is not as talented as the year before, can make a run to the College World Series, you're probably done at Virginia, because you're draft eligible. We have seen guys who blow out in the spring who still get drafted in the first round. Like, you are likely out the door.
Yes.
Was that on your mind? You know, how did you evaluate that? Because as you're going through the draft process, you're technically like unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. That was all that added, the things that the added pressure of life is, I myself was aware that things were happening while trying to maintain my performance, while trying to maintain things weren't happening. And yeah, it's just life. I mean, that's baseball. I was trying to play healthily with an unhealthy elbow that just wasn't going to get better. And one of the things that I've learned from that is I need to be honest with myself in the future when something like that's happening. And it was just a learning moment. But yeah, that made it really hard to focus on baseball, just because I was doing everything I could to stay on the field. And then I think the lat and mono were a blessing in disguise.
How did you what were the conversations around the 2015 draft? Because you were someone who, if you were healthy, you're slam dunk first rounder, but you were one of those people, which it happens in the draft. I think Sean Manaea was kind of the same way, where it was like, big question mark on this guy. We don't know what his health is. And you're sitting here, like, you're counting on these people to determine your future, where you're going, what your slot's going to be, things like that. You're also watching your team. Like, how did those conversations develop?
I wasn't worried about where or when I got drafted. I just wanted to be healthy. I see life is going to happen whether we like it or not. We just need to prepare ourselves and put ourselves in the position for it to happen. You know, sometimes it happens for the better or the worse. And the thing that I'm a control freak when it comes to life. And the thing that I really struggled with personally was I couldn't do more to get better. The more that I put in that year, the worse it got. So that was the thing, like, singularly, I remember being really, 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 like, mentally distraught about, was just my elbow is not getting better. And then having to have these conversations and figuring out what I'm going to tell people as a
21-year-old, what I'm going to tell my parents, what I'm going to tell my agent, what do I tell my trainer, what do I tell my coach? You know, I got to play for the guys. It's just, it's life, you know, it's a metaphor for life. And it was just a lot to handle. And at the end of the day, I'm just very fortunate that I had the people around me to give me the information to put me where I am today, because it was just one of those things that could have gone one or two ways, you know, but it happened as it happened. But it was definitely like, I was not worried about baseball for a while. That year it was tough.
When you got to the College World Series, like how close to 100% were you? Anywhere close?
Well, I didn't have much of a ligament.
So not great, because usually you need those.
No. My lap felt good, but I woke up the next morning and I couldn't get my arm past 90 degrees. So yeah, I wasn't aware of what was going on. I thought I had tendonitis until the Brewers drafted me. But
so
yeah.
before that, I mean, so then walk me through, it's the College World Series, the deciding game of the College World Series. You have not pitched in ages, and Brian O'Connor calls on you to come close this thing out. What was your mentality? But like, when you're throwing, are you like, hey, I feel good, like I'm gonna do this? Or you're like, I don't have a ligament.
So it didn't hurt then, because I was it's almost like a storybook ending. The mono and the 8 or 9 weeks that I had off had let my ligament scar down. The tissue had started to repair. Obviously, when I got surgery, they could see the storybook of what happened. But basically, I had started to heal. And then I think I retore it that game. I think that because I woke up the next morning and remember looking at Waddell, because he was my roommate for the whole year, my guy. And I looked at him on the plane and I couldn't get my hand to 90 degrees. So I looked at him, and that was kind of the moment, like something's happened, because that hadn't happened before. So,
I mean, I got to ask, worth it though?
Oh yeah. I mean, I wouldn't, people have asked me if I would go back and change my decisions in life, and I would not.
I mean, it was, if for listeners unaware, you came in, closed out the College World Series, 2 innings, 5 strikeouts, complete monkey off your back, like same team. I mean, as storybook as it possibly could have been.
I was all I could think about was the family and just the people. I remember before I threw like one of the last two pitches, it was right after I had forgotten what a fastball wave or a slider was, forgot what pitch it was called. We had a meeting. I just knew what was going to happen. And I remember thinking it was like looking into the stands and then just taking that energy and throwing it to home plate. It wasn't about me. It was wild.
Well, you guys, you win the 2015 College World Series, and like is the weird reality for all drafted college guys.
You have to pack up your dorm room,
get out, go to, you know, Missoula or whatever, wherever they're sending you. But with you, that means bring on the pre-draft, you know, or the physical, the pre-signing
physical.
That's
the thing that I was worried about.
And so, I mean, you get that news, you get a 7-figure bonus, but you signed for under slot, less than what you agreed to because of that. But I'm curious, you go through the pre-draft, there's concern enough where they dock your bonus, but you still go out and throw. Was it, I'm curious the, how that came about, like you didn't just get shut down for the whole year.
Yep. So when I got flown out there, I got an MRI. The doctor realized pretty quickly. I remember in the physical, this is what I realized, because they had their guy on me to look at all my joints. And he looked at my right elbow and he looked at my left elbow. And he goes, I just went through all the questions and showed me just how it felt like my right elbow had a bunch of screws in it. My left elbow, there was nothing, like he could move my hand in a bunch of directions, but it didn't hurt. And then when I got the MRI about an hour later, sure enough, obviously, there was a tear in it, but I think somewhere upwards of like 85% of people that have Tommy John surgery, it's a chronic injury. And basically the injury that I had basically been throwing with for a while, one of three things is going to happen. I was going to throw for the rest of my career, not have an issue, which was the least likely thing to happen. Or I was going to keep throwing and develop bone spurs, which then I would need surgery to repair it. or I would just, you know, start throwing again and need Tommy John. And he was saying, well, since you've been throwing, let's see what we can get out of it and then go from there, you know. So that's why I stayed close when I went up to the Timber Rattlers. Stayed, kept me close to Milwaukee.
So you go out, you throw 12 innings, and then you don't throw another professional pitch, at least in a real game, for 3 years. Your first 3 years in the minors are more a story of surgeries, rehabbing, dealing with, you know, everything a pitcher doesn't want to deal with.
Yep.
And I'm curious, you go from, especially like once you got into high school, decided that I want to make a go of this, that requires a lifestyle, like the lifestyle that you saw, you know, when you went down to East Coast Pro, of baseball. You know, baseball is life. You're doing it year round. You're focused on, you're in the gym, you're doing all the stuff. You're focused on, you know, being an All-American at Virginia, winning College World Series, getting drafted, doing all this thing. Suddenly when you're rehabbing, yes, you have to handle your situation, you're rehabbing, get healthy, whatever, but you have a lot of time to explore other areas of life. You can no longer play baseball. You don't have to spend 10 days or 10 hours at the ballpark a day. What did you do with your free time? You're in your, you know, you're starting to get into your early to mid 20s. You're, you know, looking at life. And I would assume after a couple surgeries, you're like, maybe I'm not going to play in the big leagues, or maybe this isn't for me long-term. How did you spend that time and kind of grow up with the absence of baseball for 3 years?
Well, I mean, I was at the field for probably 4 or 5 hours a day during that time every day. I mean, I think we maybe had one or two off days a week. And then maybe for those 2 years I was there, I only missed 3 or 4 weeks away from the field, because I was training. And when I came back from Tommy John, I was throwing harder than I'd ever thrown before. I had done the classic. My floor had gone up. And then even after the nerve surgery, I felt fine. I felt competitive. I never ever saw either of those things ending my career. But out in Arizona, I picked up golf, spent a lot of time doing that. Went to California a bunch, went up to Sedona. We traveled a lot, saw a bunch of great music out there. Life didn't stop. I was just a baseball player the way I saw it. I had played baseball for 15 years at that point, and 8 of them were pretty competitive, and the last 5 were pretty stressful. Like, this is a year off. I'm going to get really strong, address some of these mechanical things in the weight room, and get really strong. And that was just every time I had a surgery, it would restart. But after the third surgery, that was when I started to have kind of those thoughts. When I had thoracic outlet, that was the least painful surgery, but probably the hardest mentally.
Because is it the unknown of it all? Because that is a much more, I guess, recent phenomenon. We've seen it. I think like Matt Harvey really noticed, you know, notable alumni of that surgery and things like that. Like what about that made it different?
Well, that I actually think started my sophomore year of college. I think that a lot of the issues with thoracic outlet surgery, I think that it is going to become an epidemic as people grow in and are more focused on technology, and their focus is below their eye line. They're leaning forward. I think you're going to start seeing a lot more pitchers with it. Like, I just didn't know I had it. My sophomore year, I was throwing, and I would, about my 80th pitch mark, I would start getting shooting nerve, just sensations in the top of my hand, didn't affect anything. And then I remember actually in the game against Pitt, my arm slot felt lower. It just felt lower. Something felt different, but I went with it and that game worked. But I remember thinking something felt different mechanically. And then the longer I threw in 2018, I remember I was throwing with my buddy Devin, my throwing partner, who was my guy back in the day, went through Tommy John with us. And I went to the bucket of balls and they were all new. And I kept picking up the balls and thinking they were all waterlogged. And it was just like, dude, what is going on? And I threw him a ball and he's like, no, this is fine. Threw him another ball and said, that one's fine. Then it hit me that's why I couldn't hit him in the chest until I was throwing hard. And that's why I couldn't throw as hard. And I started to begin to realize that my arm was going numb a lot more at night, but all of these things are are subliminal. They aren't things that you see. And I think a lot of people that struggle with location, lose their location in velo unexplained, or are dealing with nerve issues it's so complicated. You have disc, you have a bunch of soft tissue up in your neck, and then you have the anatomical, the bone structure in your shoulder is shaped. All of those things come into play. And unfortunately, my coracoid process is shaped like a hook, and that's not a good thing for someone that is throwing a lot of force into the front of their shoulder the way that I threw. So those were all things that I just had to, that was a big, tough surgery because it took my confidence away from me neurologically. I mean, it's an awful thing.
You miss 2019. Most everybody who wasn't a big leaguer misses 2020. When you get back in 2021, what was your relationship to baseball? Like when you're back on the mound, when you're throwing, you're now in the bullpen, you are, you know, 6 years removed from winning a College World Series, being a top prospect, things like that. Was it a relief to be back out there? Was there still stress? Was there worry about undergoing another surgery? Kind of what was your relationship to baseball at that point? It had been such a long stretch since you were a regular baseball player.
I mean, after COVID, I was just happy to be out there.
That's a good point.
there was an elated feeling. Like, I mean, in life, that's when you realize like so many of these conversations, like they could be about me, but I was happy to be back out there with the boys. I mean, it's been a year waiting, a lot longer for me. I remember talking to our psychologist before COVID, and I said, you know, how I know this season isn't going to happen is because I feel good. You know, that I was joking facetiously, but that's just something I had to grapple with during COVID. So the way that I looked at it is I'm happy to be back out here. People are healthy. We're, you know, things are moving in the right direction as a society. Really, we're able to do this. We're just fortunate to be able to do this. And my body didn't feel healthy. I had missed so much time, but I was mentally is in the best place I'd probably been in 10 years, just happy to be there, not worrying about outcomes, just enjoying the moment, you know, whenever they called me, I would be ready to pitch. And if they told me they didn't need me there anymore because they had another 19-year-old lefty that was throwing 95, I was okay with that too.
You get traded midseason 2021 to the Pirates. You're in AAA for 2022. Did it feel like you're knocking on the door? Because AAA is a variety of outcomes. There's people who are knocking on the door. There's guys who are on the way up. There's guys who are on the way back down. Then there's guys in uniform. What did that feel like to you?
I mean, I told them I'm a year away from being back to where I was. During this year, there's going to be ups and downs. I felt like I was a freshman in college again. My body was starting to get strong. My velo was starting to come back. But I was over the baseball lifestyle, I guess you could say. It'd been kind of my soul was over the pain and the time that I'd put in it. So that year I was just enjoying the moment. I was in a position where they had a bunch of lefties that had a longer tenure with the Pirates that deserved to be up there more than me. So I was just I can read the room at that point in my career. But I personally did. I felt like I was competing, but not with. It was like the worst day every day. I have to go out and figure out how to get out. You know, it wasn't the uber confident. I can just step up there. My throwing partner Eric, who I played with for a long time with the Brewers, I woke him up after warming up for about an hour and a half off the couch, about 5 minutes before we were throwing. He's had a couple issues, but his arm's great. And he woke up, it was just this realization that I had to do all of this stuff just to be ready to play every day. And it became more about not baseball. But when I was playing, I had fun. I mean, I understood the situation.
So when you get released by the Pirates, you're getting outs. You have an ERA, sub-3 ERA. Like, there's something there. The metrics are, you know, up and down. Was there thought to trying to pick up somewhere else, going to play indie ball, doing all this? Or was it, you know, you walked out of the office and it's like, it's time for a new phase of my life?
I wanted to, but the thing that I had really wanted to finish was school. I had want to start just, I spent so much time in baseball developing this baseball thing that unfortunately your body is the thing that determines how long you play that. That's life. That's everything. But I've had so many curiosities outside of life, and I've really enjoyed, and I found out that I really enjoy the biomechanical, the physics aspect of how the body works and how the ball gets to home plate, and was constantly breaking down and pestering our PT and our strength coaches, because we had some of the best in the world, you know, and learning about that. And I realized at the end of it that I just don't think that my body can compete with these younger guys anymore. I think that I can. I think I can until the day that I die. You know, that's the illusion of the ego. But I was definitely ready. I stayed ready. I didn't want to go back and play that year, but the plan was to maybe go back and see how strong I could get and see what I could gain back. But my soul was starting to pull away from it. I had seen the people and seeing the fire in people's eyes that are still around, and I just didn't have that anymore. And sometimes in life, it's time to pass the torch. And I feel that I'm better suited to make people aware of kind of the things that I wasn't aware of as a kid. You know, I learned backwards in a lot of ways, and I think that that's going to make me a good teacher moving forward. So
yeah, there's a really delightful article on UVA's website about you and Mike Poppy going back and finishing your degrees at the same time. Alumni from those UVA teams. So you wrap your career. If you could go back and give your, let's say your 21-year-old self a pep talk, like right after you signed out of the Brewers, what would that pep talk look like?
It's gonna be a tough row, but I mean,
even while you're dealing with injuries, I would say at UVA, if you could give that kid a pep talk,
I would tell him, just keep going, man. You're making the right choices. My grandmother, before she passed, she gave me a piece of advice telling me that, you know, people are going to come through life and try and change me, but I needed to chase the truth of, you know, who I really am and what the truth is in life, and be a good person. And it's just, that's kind of something that I've woke up and thought about a lot. You know, that's just something that's ingrained into me. And that's the thing, probably, honestly, that's the thing I tell myself when the going gets bad. And that's the thing I would tell myself then. So I would like to, you know, pat myself on the back for staying true to that. But that is, it's life, man. There's nothing you can tell people other than to stay true to who you are and be honest, you know, be a good person.
I got a quick rapid fire for you, then I'll let you get out of here.
Yes, sir.
Favorite ACC road stadium?
The most hectic one's probably FSU.
That would make sense.
Clemson's beautiful, though. I mean, all of them are, but FSU, I remember him seeing the Canadian national anthem, and that was, I didn't have a good outing there. I'm not going to blame anything on anything, but coming from an easily distracted human, that was funny.
Favorite minor league stadium?
I feel like Pensacola is beautiful.
The Blue Wahoo is, they Airbnb'd that out during COVID.
That's wild.
Best hitter you ever faced?
Best numbers wise or hardest to get out?
Man, this is your question. It's your definition, whatever you think.
I mean, I've faced some good hitters, but I struggle to focus on that. I never felt like I couldn't get anyone out, but I feel like DJ Stewart from, not his necessarily, it was just the hardest to get out. Just, I didn't like the way his stance was.
The short crouch, like crouchy, yeah, squatty stance for like a big dude.
For a guy that struggles to throw strike, like sometimes I'm hoping it's a strike, and this guy's a small zone, and he can hit it a mile. Corey Ray was pretty good too. He tagged me.
That's two first round picks. Best Charlottesville food spot.
I like the White Spot.
I have eaten at the White Spot and enjoyed it. Okay, at last one, everyone gets this. Do you have a nightmare bus ride story from the minor leagues?
Yeah, we had. I mean, it's only a nightmare in life if you let it be, but we had an 8-hour bus ride turn into a 20-hour bus ride where our bus broke down twice. The coach's bus had to come back a couple hours. Then we had to pile 30 people on a 15-person bus. Everyone had a cold. We all got sick from the bus trip. I remember going to bed at 5 p.m., waking up at 11 a.m., and they, to a phone call saying I had to start that day. Ended up throwing 3 innings, just like, I felt awful, but
somehow got through it, and it ended up being, you know, my buddy texted me and was like, that was really good for your career, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, it was very strenuous, but crazy bus trip. We got $100 worth of Taco Bell. It's a bunch of things. Yeah. But yeah, it was not fun.
Ending the day with Taco Bell though will always make a bad day just a little bit better.
Yeah. I think the last 4 hours of the trip, we were all standing room on the coach's bus, and there were some people that were fed up with it.
That is a tough goat. Nathan Kirby, that's all I've got for you. Thank you so much for joining from Phenom to the Farm.
Thank you for having me, man. It's been a pleasure.
You got it, man. And that's it for today's episode from Phenom to the Farm. Huge thanks to Nathan Kirby for stopping by, walking us through his career. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.